We're back with more of Lake Effect. I'm Bonnie North. Thanks for joining us. Of all the isms that are out there, racism is one of the most enduring and, in this supposedly post-racial age, the most pernicious. It can be hard for people of different races to even talk openly with each other about how race has impacted them without the conversation devolving into accusations. And that makes any change in race relations that much more difficult to achieve. Next Act Theater is throwing open that conversational door with its production of David Mamet's play, Race. Mamet is known for his biting and unsparing dialogue, and he's true to form here. I recently sat down to talk with the director, Edward Morgan, and the cast, David Cesarini, who's also the producing artistic director of Next Act, Tiffany Renee Johnson, Lee Palmer, and Jonathan Smoots. Morgan says this play offers a fresh take on the subject.
It's a very different kind of look at race, more about an analysis of how race relations have affected the people through all the institutions in this country right now in the present. And in that sense, it felt really fresh. I haven't read or seen a play quite like this before.
So I have to say, I feel the same way having read it, that, you know, I'm hearing dialogue that I'm not sure that we ever really hear in a public forum. Maybe it's a private thing, but I'm not sure that I do. And I want everybody to jump in here. I mean, what does Mamet bring to this discussion that we need to have in this country?
I do think that there's dialogue that we don't often see. I think that the dialogue in race kind of encourages us, challenges us to, as actors and the people who will view the play, to think about the prejudices that we all have and to maybe shift a bit and to change perhaps how we look at people who are different from us. Yeah, and to just talk about it. I think talking about it is important, and this is a show that will definitely be an impetus for conversation.
I guess we probably should set up the play, and maybe David, you can set up where we are and who these four people are.
Sure. Jack and Henry form a law firm. They've been together 20 years, a black lawyer and a white lawyer. We assume they're in a cosmopolitan city of some sort, could be New York, could be Chicago. There is a big case that's been out there. It's been in the papers of a elderly.
Yeah, sorry.
I beg your pardon.
Not so elderly.
Sixty-ish.
Rich
guy, rich white guy, who's out there, and he has been accused. We will soon learn of a horrible assault on a young black woman, and he suddenly shows up at our doorstep. That's the beginning of the play. There he is. We have no knowledge that he was on his way, and we're adjusting to him right there. And that is Charles Strickland. The fourth character is Susan, who we have just hired in our law firm, maybe we figured a couple of months ago, as a young, ready-to-go lawyer, but she's our rookie, and she's sort of Jack's project, and he takes time out during as the play goes along to grill, to chat, to learn from, to glean information, to get her to think and process what's going on.
And so why do you think Jack rather than Henry? Because that would be probably the obvious connection, because you're both black. And so I think the audience, again, that's an assumption, that they might assume you as Henry would be the mentor, but you don't like her.
No, Henry's old-fashioned and old-school. When you think about the two characters of him and Susan, he believes in saying yes, sir, yes, ma'am. He comes from a Southern background. He believes that respect should be in place, but he thinks of the young people as bypassing that and not doing that. And so when she first comes in for the interview, he has concerns about hiring her. He doesn't want her to be a part of it because he's looking for a different type of young person to be in the law firm. And Jack kind of overrides him and decides to hire her anyway. And he has his suspicions, and they don't never go away. So you would maybe assume that would happen, but there's that divide, which you could also call a prejudice as far as age, even in the same race.
Right. I mean, the thing that's, to me, wonderful about this play is that there isn't anything that he's not poking at and holding up and saying, wait a minute. One of the things is the law itself.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he is not kind.
Yeah.
But not in, a stereotypical way. It's not like all lawyers are bad.
No. Well, he's also not untruthful in describing what really goes on in the courtroom. As he says, you don't go for the truth, you go to win. there are no facts to this case. There are two fictions which the opposing teams will try to impress upon the jury. That's what happens in courtrooms. And I see some of our board members who are lawyers, when I quote that, nodding their heads and saying, yeah, yeah, that's kind of what goes on.
So much for justice is blind?
Well, exactly. And that's what I think, an illusion that we have on the outside, or that we have watching Law and Order all the time. I liken this to a really good middle part of a Law and Order episode, you know, when the lawyers are trying to figure it out. I was also struck when I first read the play, I could not stop reading the play till I was finished. That was one thing that struck me and stuck with me today. It's really well written. It's incredibly engaging in that sense. And I'll tell you, the dialogue's really hard to learn because Mamet's language is all his own. It's English and it's recognizable, but his syntax is all twisted up in his own way. And it works. It's unique, but it's tough.
The two of you have a lot of that dialogue. I mean, you know, you guys really are firing off each other because you also have that 20-year history, too.
We've been friends for a long time, and we're good lawyers. You know, we're well-known in this particular city. And, yes, like he was saying, the dialogue is incredibly hard, but you have to stay on top of it because it is Mamet. It is his words, and it really does tell a story in a different way. And, you know, it really does attack. And I heard something where in the system, if there's no innocence, it's either guilty or not guilty. And exactly what does that mean? And I think what the people will find out, what the audience will find out, is we kind of explain that a little bit more.
And Jonathan, for you, and you're sort of the catalyst that starts this whole thing going, or at least your predicament does.
Yeah. Well, my character sees himself as a good guy. A good guy who has no race prejudice that he knows of, and who has lived an upright and decent life. And I think a lot of people in the audience will recognize themselves in me. And the play, and what I like about the play more than anything, is how absolutely blunt it is. And you asked, your first question was about what makes a play different or special. And we talk about things in such a direct way that black and white people do not, it's not polite, it's not proper, it's not polite, it's not politically correct to say these things out loud, but it's the very kind of dialogue that I think will help undo the prejudice that has this country and the whole world in its stranglehold.
And what about you?
I do think it's very, very direct, and it is blatant, and it's shocking. When I read the play, I was like, whoa, Mamet is going there. And as I said before, it's a lot of things that we would not say to each other are in this play, and it's interesting to be able to have that dialogue as actors. But I do think that it's written in a way that will have people kind of on the edge of their seats and so shocked about how things are expressed, but shocked into thought and shocked into conversation and hopefully shocked into change. You know, I think that's the beauty of the language, though it might hit you like, whoa. I think it's great because it will inspire a plethora of things.
For me, it was like, my gosh, did he really just say that? Did they really just say that to each other? Because it's not like any of us are innocent of thinking those things. We all have our prejudices, but most of us like to think that we have somehow gone past that. And I think that's who he's talking to, all of us. Mm-hmm. All of us are guilty of something prejudicial.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
In the first rehearsal, our director told us to feel comfortable to say anything to each other, and it was really necessary. That was really refreshing for me because I asked questions of black people. I grew up in a lily white community. I now know black people and have black friends, but when I growing up, I sure didn't. And there's just silly, everyday things that we can ask each other that we would never ask because it's too embarrassing.
Like what?
Oh, gosh, what did I... You guys are...
You had a couple good ones.
Yeah, wait, let me think of one.
You would remember better than me.
One he asked today, this may not be the best one, but he was asking about whether it was kind of less likely for black men to grow hair out of their ears than white men, because
no, that's just old men, Jonathan.
No.
You notice that Lee doesn't have hair growing out of his ears, and Jonathan does. So he asked me. So he's like, so I was wondering, is that like a black thing? Like, and I was like, I'm not sure.
See, now I would never have asked that under ordinary circumstances. But all the
you do see it when you get to be 80s and 90s.
Oh, okay.
But not as early as you were talking about.
And so were there questions that you two asked of whites?
Well, you know, what was interesting was just sharing stories. Like, I've known these gentlemen for 30 years or so. And just to be able to talk about some things that we never spoke about was just really, really refreshing. You know, you just shared stories about growing up. I grew up in the South in the early 60s. So I saw the signs. I saw, you know, colored people only, same in bathrooms. I remember going to restaurants in the back of the restaurants, you know, where you could order but you couldn't sit inside, or going to the movies where you had to sit upstairs, and being able to share these stories that these guys have never heard from me before. But this play brings that kind of stuff out, and you really put it on the table. And it's just refreshing to rehearse that way and talk about things like that.
Yeah, unless the play seem too much to be A, heavy, or B, about shock, I think ultimately Mamet's point of view is ironic. And I think what's interesting is that he's pulling the rug out from under all these folks. And there's a lot of humor and a lot of intelligence behind it. Its real force, I think, is its intelligence and not quite a satiric but an ironic bite rather than dramatic weight, I think. The tone of the color in that sense of the piece in that way is both unique and again, a different way than we usually talk about race.
So do you hope, as a cast and you as the director, that people are really going to just be talking about this and maybe sparking something bigger in terms of dialogue? I mean, we certainly know here in Milwaukee, race is a huge issue, and it never goes away, and it's talked around. Sometimes it's talked about directly, but it's usually talked kind of around it in soft terms.
I would like to see the show make people talk about it. We talk around things far too often. So I would like for people to be entertained. I would like for them to be captured. I would like for them to think. I would like for them to be inspired to really talk and to not be afraid to talk about it. Because, you know, if you push the fear aside, you know, you can get to where you need to go.
I have this dream that people will start to think in terms of the separation of rich and poor and forget about color. And
that certainly plays a part in this.
Yeah, it plays some part in this. And I said that to Lee the other day. I said, do you think maybe whites and blacks will hold hands and realize that we've got more in this game than we need a living wage, we need this, we need this. And I said, you think that'll happen? He said, well, I don't think so.
So you don't think so, huh?
No, the rich 1%, no. I mean, will they ever give it back? Will they share it amongst us all? I mean, how many things could change if that money could be spread out? You know, and people, like you said, people are needing jobs, and you just want to see, you know, like you said, black and white coming together, because there's a lot more of us, middle and lower class, of all races than there are up there as far as the billionaires go. So we, as a people like that, even economically, need to look at that and work together to make those changes.
You think this play will help?
I think even if it gets people talking about it and wanting to do something differently or wanting to help, even if it gets them talking about it, it's a change.
Yeah.
And I'm sure they will talk about it.
Yeah, I think he's contributing a different voice to the ongoing discussion about how race history and present race issues affect all of us. You know, there's some accurate analysis of how it affects all of us in there. Yeah. So in that way, it's another voice. It's an interesting voice.
And David, this is like smack in the middle of NextAct's mission.
Yeah, we like to put things on the table for people to talk about. An interesting twist with this particular play, this particular playwright, he has put into his publication contracts that a prohibition on talkbacks for a period of 2 hours after the show comes down.
Really?
Yes, indeed. Which you would think would be kind of odd, especially for a play like this. So we are going to encourage in some form or other discussion amongst our patrons, and we'll figure that out as we go along. But yeah, we certainly look forward to hearing from our people on the web and, you know, that sort of feedback.
It bothers me when people pretend as if we are living in a post-racial society, because in my opinion, there are specific instances which remind us that we are not there at all. And that is why we have to talk about it. And I think talking about it could lead to some people's opinions being shifted, because we can't just talk about it. Someone's mind has to change. You know, it's great to be in the company of people who believe in justice and who believe in equality, but there are so many other people who have power to take matters into their own hands and to take lives away. So how do we change those minds?
What I find interesting about this play is that he doesn't offer answers. Nope. At least not to me. Right. You know, I mean, he doesn't actually say, here's a prescription about how to change this. He's just kind of showing it.
Audacious as he can be, he's not that audacious, I don't think, to go that far. Yeah. I think he offers kind of an interesting example of Henry and Jack's relationship. They at least are able to share openly their ideas and opinions and perspectives from his own culture. There's something to be said there. Is a solution that simply talking. We have to be more free and open to share honest opinions and perspectives about each other and the issues.
I would say it's a virtue of the play that it doesn't prescribe answers, that it raises questions.
Right.
I think it's a much more interesting play for that and more likely to provoke thought because it doesn't preach.
Well, I want to thank all of you for taking time out of rehearsal to talk to me and break a leg. This is going to be a fantastic production.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bonnie.
Thank you.
Thank you.
David Cesarini, Tiffany Renee Johnson, Lee Palmer, and Jonathan Smoots all star in David Mamet's play Race, opening tonight at Next Act Theater. Edward Morgan directs the show. I spoke with all of them in Next Act's rehearsal hall, and there is a link to more information about the production at wuwm.com/lakeeffect. We'll take one last break, and then coming up next, a recent book reveals how Old World Wisconsin came to be. That's when Lake Effect returns on WUWM.